You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Today on The Grave Talks, haunted Randolph County and saving the old properties. A conversation about saving and preserving the history and the hauntings of historic buildings in East Central Indiana. Dan and Richard Allen started the nonprofit Saving the Old Properties to instill an appreciation of history through the acquisition, restoration, and preservation of endangered historical buildings with architectural significance in the state of Indiana before they're destroyed by time or developers. Several of these properties remain occupied by their previous inhabitants, ghosts. Not only do they offer historical tours of several of their properties, but they are also open for paranormal investigations. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll talk about the properties and the hauntings with Richard Allen with Saving the Old Properties, Kate Thornburg, General Manager, and Ted Martin, Historian. I want to say thank you to all three of you for being here today, and I'm going to start by introducing Ted Martin. Now, Ted, you're the local historian in the area there in East Central Indiana?
Yeah, I was for the Historical Society for quite a while.
So you've been in that area for quite a bit of your life?
I've been here my whole life.
So I think your input on what we're going to talk about today is going to be really interesting. And then we have Kate Thornburg with us. Kate,
hi.
You are the general manager of these properties that we're going to talk about today. And we're talking about more than one location, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that's right. There are six properties under the Saving the Old Properties Incorporated umbrella.
And then we have with us today, Rich Allen. Now, Rich, you and your brother, I heard it's your twin brother, no less.
You, yes, identical.
I wouldn't even know if the wrong one showed up today on Zoom. You and your brother own these properties, and you have a 501c3 nonprofit, Saving the Old Properties. So yeah. Give me a little information about the nonprofit and what your reason for starting that was.
The reason why we started was back in 96, we purchased the jail in Harper City, and I used to work there, so I knew the jail, and it was like a silent auction. And so I just put a crazy low bid in, and there was other people bidding, and they all just wanted to just like knock it down or make a parking lot or make it into a cheap rental and walk away from it when it was unlivable. And John Dillinger and his gang was there. Dillinger played cards with the sheriff. And it was the first jail. The jail before that was on the courthouse lawn. That was a log cabin. So it's really the first jail in the whole county, and nobody had batted an eye to just knock it down, you know, bid for it and surprisingly got it. And so I was living in it, and this lady said, "Can I come pictures of your place?" I thought, okay. And another group came and said, "Hey, could we investigate, see if it's haunted?" And it's like, we'll pay you. Huh?
It's like, yeah, that would be nice.
We had no idea there were people like that out there. And so that's what kind of started it. And it's open to whatever. It's not just for that, but that's what's kind of paying the bills to keep the work done on it. My brother saw this place, the asylum here in Winchester, and noticed it was kind of like getting a little more and a little more run down, and the county still owned it and they didn't know what to do with it. So they were planning on locking it down. They didn't want to, but it was a drain on the county. So then that's when Dan had to come by and see it and told them what we wanted to do with it, because they thought we'd turn it into apartments or something like everybody else seems to do. So they were very pleased that we just wanted to keep it as original as possible. So that's what kind of started all this. My brother's the one that started it. I was out in Colorado at the time, started this business. When I riffed from work out there, I came back and helped him here.
I really appreciate what you're doing too, because what you said is so true. They're expensive to maintain. Mm-hmm. So a lot of counties don't have the funds that they need to keep the properties in any sort of decent state. So they end up getting torn down. And once they're torn down, they're gone and the history's gone with them. John Dillinger stayed at that jail. I mean, you know, there's definitely some history here.
It's undocumented that he was there because the county didn't want him known that he was there because he was a thug. They showed me the book where signed him in under Bob Smith. So anyway, there's no record of him being there, but he did play cards with the sheriff.
He gets to go in under assumed name. He gets to play cards with the sheriff. He's not treated like a regular guy.
Right. And I'm sure there was some, you know, money exchanged, but you'll never know why the sheriff would let him in to play cards and not just arrest him. But our county was the second bank he hit after he got out of criminal college or prison. Apparently wasn't wanted at the time, but he would go in and case out the place and see what kind of car they drove and what kind of deputies he have. And he was there, and then he robbed a bank there in our county.
And Rich, do you own six properties altogether then?
I'd have to count.
Kate would know. Kate, does he own six properties?
Yes, there are six properties under the umbrella. So there's the old Blackfoot County Jail, which was the first, followed by the asylum. And then they purchased the Liberty Township School and the Stone Mansion. And they also own two churches, the Center Church in Portland, Indiana, and the, we're calling it the Jim Jones Boyhood Church in Lynn, Indiana.
And I was talking to you the other day, and you kind of dropped that, the Jim Jones Boyhood Church. And I'm like, well, it's not that Jim Jones, but it is that Jim Jones.
It is Kool-Aid Boy Jim Jones. Yes.
That's
interesting. So this was the church he attended when he was young, before he got into all his crazy cult stuff.
Now, I do want to focus on some of these other buildings, the Randolph County Infirmary and Asylum, and the jail. Now, there's also a speakeasy. It's
yes.
Irvin Campbell
so
speakeasy.
That, I kind of count that one with the jail. So I guess technically they actually own seven historic properties.
Oh, Rich, look, you own more than you thought.
Yeah. And that's why I don't like counting them, because I'll forget something.
But one thing I think is so interesting, and I hear a lot of people doing the paranormal investigations, opening it up to people. It's helping them pay their own bills. I think it's a brilliant way to get some revenue. But also, these are people who are going to go in. They're not going to tear anything up. They'll be respectful of the space, very respectful of the space. They take all their stuff with them when they're gone. I just think it's a great way to get people into those buildings and help with the upkeep of those buildings at the same time.
Yes, and we do a lot of history tours. So it's not like people are like, oh, I want to know only about ghosts. They want to know the history of the place as well.
Now, are each of those, the mansion, the jail, the Randolph County Infirmary and Asylum, are they all three open for regular tours as well?
Yes.
Let's go ahead and talk about the jail a little bit as far as any hauntings, and then I really want to dive into these other two buildings.
Okay.
The jail, do you know anything about hauntings there? Or?
Okay, the first thing that happened was my brother, he was living in Washington State. Then he come back and started working for AT&T. So he moved into the jail with me. And about 2 years into it, he was laying in bed and a guy walks in. You couldn't hear him. Nothing. So it's like if you walk in an old building, you're going to hear the floors and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So he was just like staring at him. You figure, you know, as soon as you take your eyes away, it'll be gone. So he was just studying him. And he walked to the foot of his bed and bent over and he said the most pleasant smile. He stood back up and walked out the door. He was telling this to our local historian. And he goes, oh, that's Ed Townsend. Ed Townsend we had three sheriffs in 1 week. The first sheriff went out on domestic, got shot and killed. The second one was Ed, which was a deputy forever and finally got to be sheriff. Being sheriff, he got to live in the front part of the jail. That was the way they built them back in the day. You had to live in the same structure as the prison. Sheriff got to move in and he died of a massive heart attack. And that was like in 1976. So when my brother saw him, it was probably early 2000s. So that was the first real thing that happened. Then I had moved out to Colorado. A lot of things happened to my brother when I was gone. People walking up the stairs. He got a rug thrown at him one day. He don't know why, but my niece came in. And with some friends of hers at night, and they were drunk. And so they were very upset, the tenants of the jail, I should say. And they just stomped around that night. It's been very active. Other people get scratched. It's just on and on.
You said that you lived there as well in the jail for a while?
Yeah, we lived there. I lived there from like 96 to just last year, with the exception of the 9 years I was in Colorado. We were living in it, one of us, since 96.
Was it an operating jail up until 95? Because I was reading it was established in 1879, but yes. It was in use up until 1995?
Yep. And it was the oldest active jail in the county or in the state.
So obviously there's some people who were in the jail who just never left.
There was people that died in there, but I think it's where they wanted to come back. They felt safe. I don't know why people want to come back to that, but they're there. And that part I don't understand. But.
Yeah. Well, and it's so hard to say. I was talking to someone about a penitentiary. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want, if I was in the afterlife, I don't think I'd want to come back and haunt there. But maybe there's a grievance or something that ties them to the building.
Maybe it was a good time when they were there, you know, knowing people coming in and out. And I have no idea.
Is the jail open for tours and paranormal investigations? Are they available?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's only one of two turnstiles left in the state. That we have.
It kind of looks like a jail / courthouse. If I drive by that building, I wouldn't think of that it was a jail.
Right, the front part, the living mm-hmm. quarters. Yeah, you wouldn't know until you drove around back and saw the bars.
Living in that, I'm assuming live in the front part or did live in the front part. Is the back of it still cells and everything?
Yes, it's pretty much exactly the way they left it when they left. that's what we would, we want to restore it back to like how it originally was, but the plans have been gone. We would love to find the plans and, you know, put it back the way it was, but we can assume how things would have been. Mm-hmm. But my, like my brother says, the old Blackford County Jail is going to stay the old Blackford County Jail.
Now, the speakeasy, the Irvin Campbell speakeasy, because, Kate, you were saying you think of them as one building. Are they connected in the speakeasy?
They're not connected.
But they're close?
They're like, they're very, very close to each other.
Okay.
And we don't generally book out the speakeasy on its own because it doesn't have restrooms. And if you're going to be somewhere for 16 hours,
you kinda need
a potty's important.
Right.
So we usually book it as an add-on to the jail. Okay. Because they are within the spitting distance, as my husband would say, of each other.
So tell me a little about the Irvin Campbell speakeasy. Was it originally built to be a speakeasy, or in the 30s, did they kind of take over the building and create a speakeasy?
Yes. In the it was originally built for dry goods. There's Irving was a building and Campbell was a building. And so they combined, and it was all one big store from the street clear to the alley, and it was a dry goods place.
On the website, it's hauntedrandolphcounty.com. There's a photo gallery. It's a pretty creepy-looking place, the speakeasy pictures. I think that's where most of those were that I looked at.
Okay.
Because it looks like you could pick up on some paranormal. Let me put it that way. It looks like you could pick up on paranormal activity there.
Right. And any women that would have been picked up in the speakeasy, during that time, women were not allowed. But certain women, I guess you would say, were allowed. The ones that you kind of paid.
Oh, those women. They were welcome in there, I'm going to guess.
Yes. So there's been full apparition of a lady somebody saw, and I don't know if they got a picture of it or not.
Now, Kate, have you spent much time in the speakeasy?
No. And even if I had, I wouldn't acknowledge any kind of paranormal activity because I have to go back in these buildings.
Exactly.
So I don't need to get myself scared out of going in. So I ignore everything. So I know nothing.
So are you one of those people you walk in and say, hey, I'm here to do my job. Please leave me
pretty
alone.
Pretty much. And I quote Shakespeare for them. So that seems to work out just fine.
I tell you, whatever it takes, I'm with you. I would be the same way. Now, Ted, which ones are you more familiar with?
Randolph County Asylum. Basically, the one I'm spatial with.
Okay, let's talk about that one. So initially, when I reached out, I had came across the Randolph County Infirmary/Asylum, and I reached out to Kate, and I didn't realize you had all these other properties. And I was very interested in talking about the asylum. And Ted, you know more of the history about that. Can you kind of fill us in a little about when it was built, what it's been used for? Because if I read correctly, and once again, you can't always believe everything you read on the internet, was it initially a poorhouse?
That's exactly what it was. It was the state of Indiana's first attempt at welfare. In other words, if you had a mental or a physical handicap that wouldn't allow you to work on your own, the county built this facility out here so you could live out here. So you had four walls and a roof over your head and three meals a day, and you didn't have to pay for it. It was handout basically from the county. And every county in Indiana, back when they first started this, at one time had one of these buildings.
You know, and I've talked to quite a few other places that it was the same where they live in different parts of the country, that they didn't know what to do with some of these people. And some of them, I know they had to actually work. You know, maybe there was a farm attached to it. And so some of these people also had to help out in that way as well.
Well, in this particular place, they were asked before they came in the front door, what would you like to do to help us out here? They had 351 acres, and it was a working farm. They raised corn, beans, and wheat like everybody else did in Indiana, and they played the market. They had big vegetable gardens so they could grow their own vegetables, and they raised their own livestock. So it was very self-sustaining. But you were asked when you come out here, is there anything you can do to help us out here? They weren't told they had to.
Okay.
If they wanted to sit in a rocking chair and look out the window 12 hours a day, they could do that if they wanted to. But most people wanted to do something to help them pass their time.
So how long was, and I hate using the term poorhouse, but that's what they used then, didn't they?
It was poor farm.
Poor farm.
Actually, when I was a kid growing up, we'd drive by out here, and my parents always called it either the old folks' home or the poor farm.
How long was it in operation as the poor farm?
Well, the first building was built out here in 1851, and it was indeed a wooden structure at that time. And due to the antiquated ways of heating the structure, needless to say, it burnt down accidentally. And so there was no one whatsoever killed or even injured in that fire. But there were 16 people that lived here at that time. And so now you got 16 people that are homeless. And so they had to hurry up and build another building on the same property, but not in the very same location, because all they got left in the very same location now is a burned out foundation, limestone foundation. So they got busy building another property adjacent to it. And Randolph County's soil has a great deal of clay in it. And so your little 4-inch field tiles and bricks and stuff were actually, well, your 4-inch field tiles were invented in Randolph County and actually shipped all over the United States to help farmers drain their fields and stuff. And so they knew how to make bricks and all that. So they built another building next door out of clay, out of bricks, but they had to do it so fast. It was a typical government job, do it quick. They had to do it really quick. And so they weren't getting the bricks near hot enough. And so it was just almost like building with two dirt clods out of the field. And so every time it would rain or there was a change in weather, they were having to repair the second building. And so it went on like that for several years. They put a building together and there were several hundred people that actually lived in the facility at one time. But it was adjacent to what we got now. But problem of it is, like I said, every time the weather would change, they had to do some fixing on it. And so they finally got tired of that and come out and looked at the old burned out foundation and decided there was nothing wrong with that foundation. They just needed to shore it up in places. And so they decided to hire a couple engineers and they got busy and they started put together another building, a third building here on the site. And they that's the one we got today. It was started in 1898, finished at the end of 1899, and people just walked across the driveway and took up residence in this place.
It's an impressive looking building. It really is.
It is very. Considering it was actually built in 1899 and opened for business then, it's very good shape. I think it's still in very good shape.
And it looks really big.
It is.
And I can't tell by the pictures how big it is, but it looks very large.
Well, Kate, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it's 72,000 square feet.
I think they measured it and it came out to be 60,000 square feet spread out over a basement, first floor, second floor, and an attic.
How many people were there?
Well, there's been 1,497 people passed through the facility from 1899 to 2006.
Oh, so it was in operation up to 2006?
It operated all the way up to 2006. In 2006, there were still six people here, but they relocated. Then there was nobody here. That's when they quit paying the superintendent and his wife and the farmhands. And basically, that's when it became vacant.
And then, as we know, the longer it sits there empty, it's just going to start falling into disrepair. So then, Rich, you heard about this one being available, and you stepped up again.
No, that was my brother.
Okay.
Yes, he drove by here, and he would see this place, and he goes, I wonder what's going on, because he never saw anybody here. He would see that, you know, maintenance was being done, but then after a while, that less and less maintenance, he decided to go to the county and find out what's going on with it. They were saying, yeah, we really don't know what we want to do. We're thinking about tearing it down because it's just getting to be too much for the county. And so that's when they kind of come up with this idea, and they had to auction it off with a business plan. And so they liked ours, and because we were just going to try and keep it as history and not apartments or something.
Right.
That's how we got a hold of this one. But when I first saw it after my brother bought it, I go, oh no, this is going to take too much work. But luckily the county had put on a metal roof, which really helped out. If it had been like a roof that was in bad shape and needed to be redone, it would have been a very big headache. But the county did do a good job of maintaining it the best they could. Luckily, it was in really pretty decent shape when we got it.
Can you go in and tour it as a museum?
When we first got it, there was absolutely nothing here. They'd auctioned it all off. So we brought things in that are antiques from all different times. We would stay here before we moved over here. We would hear in the morning the people getting up and going to work the farm. In the front kitchen here, you could hear a radio playing, and you can tell it was like 50s or 60s music, but you just couldn't quite tell what it was. And of course, then when he got up, came down, you know, it was gone. But you can actually hear the people get up around daytime and start doing their chores, getting ready to go. We bought the building and the residents came with it. It's what I always say.
Because this is the one that caught my eye there was just several different sites that had it listed as one of the most haunted places in that area.
Supposedly the 10th most haunted place in the United States.
Really? When you think about the history, there's been a lot of people who died on the property. That's where they lived.
And what I call haunted, to me, that would be like getting scared and spooked. These are just the people here going about their daily routine. So to me, it's not hauntings. It's just you got eternity to get wherever you're going. And if they want to hang around as long as they can, we have no complaints. But Ted could tell you his story about when he first got here to where he is now.
I'd love to hear that, Ted.
Well, it's kind of interesting. See, I was in the Army infantry, and I was also a firefighter. And so needless to say, if you tell me something's haunted, I don't believe in ghosts. I didn't. Dad always told me there's nothing here at night that wasn't there in the daylight, so I believed it. Well, now I know better. I've had different things happen to me out here and different things that I have seen that I cannot explain. And so, yes, I'm a definite believer now. Definite, very definite believer now.
What are some of the things that have happened to you?
Well, one of the main things is back in the early 1940s and all through the 1940s and into the 1950s, there's a retired county judge that lived out here. Now, he didn't qualify for poor farm. He had money. But the thing of it is, is that he was a sociable type person and he liked people. And so he worked a deal out with the commissioners if he could rent, stay here and pay rent. And so needless to say, they jumped on that. They took that. And so he was asked, just like everybody else, what would you like to do to help us out here? Well, he's not going to do no, what you might say, manual labor. I mean, come on, he's a judge, you know. Right. And so he volunteered to do like security. And so what they did with him was they actually gave him permission to go up in the attic and hold mock trials. Now, he doesn't have any judicial authority left. He's retired. But let's face it, if the superintendent says you can do it, you can do it. And he had actually, before, this is just before World War II, he had told the superintendent out here that they was going to have trouble with a few men coming up because it was obvious that the United States was going to get involved greatly in World War II. And he was aware that there were going to be draft dodgers. And so the judge talked the superintendent into going up to Winchester to the county jail and buying a jail cell off the county jail and taking it apart and bringing it back out here and installing it in one of the rooms up on the second floor. And so the judge, like I said, if he got him for a mock trial and he sentenced you to 2 or 3 days in jail, he got a jail to put you in now too. And so it held back a lot of petty criminal stuff, you know. Because let's face it, your jury is going to be the people that you live out here with. And if you get thrown to jail up there, everybody in the building is going to know you're in there and know why you're in there. And so it's basically like a big slap in the wrist. It's an embarrassment more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And it worked out real well, real well.
Did you kind of feel him there?
What happened was up in the attic where he would hold his mock trials. There were two guys here, and they both had SLS cameras that makes you look like a stick figure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me, said, "Ted, where would the judge hold his trial?" And I said, "Right in front of you, where you guys are looking." And so, "What do you reckon, he's still here?" And I said, "Yes, I'm pretty positive he's still here." And about that time, one of them said, "Look here on my screen." And I looked down on his screen, and there ahead of him, maybe 20 feet ahead of him, was a stick figure head peeking out behind an upright post. And he said, "You reckon that's the judge?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Do you know him?" And I said, "Yeah, well enough that I talk about him about every day." He said, "Well, let's see if you can get him out so we can see him better." So naturally, I couldn't see him with my own eyes. So I'll walk over there and say, I said, "Judge, if this is you, old buddy," I said, "coming up from behind this upright where these guys can see with their cameras." I said, "Their cameras can't hurt you. It won't hurt you at all. They just want to be able to see you better." And I turned around and walked across the room and leaned on a big chimney up there. And one of the guys said, "He's following you." I can't see anything, you know, nothing. And then one of the guys said, "As a matter of fact, he's leaning against the chimney exactly like you are, with one foot cocked up against it and just leaning against the chimney." And so I'm sitting there looking and looking and looking, and I can't see anything at all. Next thing I know, I break out into a cold sweat and I'm sick. I'm either going to throw up or pass out or both. Something's going to happen here. I don't feel good. I feel bad, real bad. I said, "What happened?" And one of the guys over there said, "Well, Ted, it looks like he likes you. He put his hand on your shoulder." Well, I don't see no hand on my shoulder. I don't feel no hand on my shoulder. But I do know I'm going to pass out just any second now. So I scooted down towards the floor. And I said, "Judge, if this is you, I like you too, but you're going to have to take your hand off of me. I'm not dead and I can't take it. I can't take you touching me." And so within 10 seconds, I felt great. I was fine. And I asked the boys, I said, what happened? They said, well, he done exactly like you asked him to. He dropped his hand down off your shoulder and walked back across the hallway there and went back behind the post, and we don't see him no more right now. So any skepticism I ever had went right out the window that evening.
That's a really amazing story. And I get why you are no longer skeptic after that.
No, I am not skeptical. Something I didn't see anything. I didn't feel anything, except I was sick. Something was happening. And it was obvious something was going on.
And it came on quickly and it left just as quickly.
Just as soon as he took his hand off of me and walked away from me, it went away.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the hauntings of Randolph County and saving the old properties. In our next episode, we'll talk more about the hauntings at the Randolph County Infirmary and Asylum, as well as the General Stone Mansion. For more information about saving the old properties, go to savingtheoldproperties.com. And for more information on tours and paranormal investigations, go to hauntedrandolphcounty.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there all ad-free. For all of us here at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes. Thank you for listening.